To get a clearer picture of how international markets can contribute to food waste at the grassroots level, we turn now to Douglas Rasugu. Douglas farms French green beans for the export market in Kenya. A lot of his beans end up getting thrown out because they don't meet the aesthetic standards of the market. His five-acre farm is just outside Nairobi.
I'm getting hungry. Hit the dirt! Look out! Was that one of ours? Yeah. Beans. Last of the beans. I'm so tired of Chinese food.
I depend on the export market for 80% of my family support. The crop, in terms of watering, it takes quite a lot of water. I can say about 50,000 liters per watering time. If you do that, that's 50,000 liters times two times a week. That's 100,000 times 6 weeks. That's 600,000 liters per acre per crop. Yeah. My crop that's considered unfit for export, first we'll start from the harvesting level. You'll find that at the farm level, we lose about 20% from the crop. Then we lose another 20% during grading when the women are grading at the shed before it's taken to the packhouse. And at the packhouse, again, we still lose another 20%. The reason for this loss is because of this. You'll find that some of these crops have very tiny scars, like these which are called wind marks. These wind marks are actually superficial on the top. This bean is actually good for consumption. But again, they look at the size, so they'll say this is stunted. You see, it's stunted, but if you take off this part and this part, this is still good for consumption. If you cut this and put it on the dinner table, it will still be eaten. It has no issue. And again, if you look at this bean, it has a few marks here and there. These are because of thrips in the shamba. However, these thrips are not harmful. It's just an insect that bit it. But if you remove this part and prepare this for dinner, it will still be eaten. So, which means that about 40 to 50 to 60% of our crop is lost from the farm to the packhouse. Looking at the issues that we've raised, you'll realize that most of these issues are actually cosmetic.
By the time an ordinary apple reaches the fresh produce shelf, it has been dipped in fungicide, bathed in chlorine, scrubbed with detergent, and polished with wax.
Okay, so we're in the produce section at the moment, and the produce section is often used as a way to get us to start impulse buying, to throw out the shopping list and just buy based on appearance or advertising. And the unique thing about fresh vegetables is that they are actually not as natural as you might think. They're often coated with waxes or shellacs, or dyes are added, or other things are done to them to make them look more appealing to us. Okay, and so often you'll see the piles of fresh apples or oranges or whatever. These ones are more likely to have some kind of preservative or be waxed or something like that.
I'm eating shellac? There's got to be something we can do.
There are safer alternatives to many of the chemical preservatives used to prolong the shelf life of our food. One such method now used for some apples is controlled atmosphere storage. Apples and many other fruits and vegetables can be kept in special cool storage chambers containing a mix of gases rather than air. The gases retard the ripening process until the produce is removed to be sold. This process allows us to eat fresh apples in February that are uncontaminated by additives.
We are in the produce section, and you can see that a lot of these things, the cauliflower, the broccoli, the cabbages, and many other things, are wrapped with plastic, and there's no need for that. All it does is prevent us from picking over and choosing the best thing. And this package just becomes waste. At the moment, waste is a big problem. 50% of waste is consumer generated, and 1/5 of all the waste generated in Canada comes from Toronto, and that should be a concern for people here.
In the old days, the farmer didn't even know if he was going to get a crop, so they were out there tasting everything and trying to, better themselves every step of the way.
In modern agriculture, there is little time to stop and taste for flavor. But for Dan Barber and his farmers and purveyors, it's about looking deeper and using more parts of the animals and vegetables they grow.
The cauliflower is a perfect example of a food where there's a lot of waste because of the size of the leaves. None of this typically gets consumed. That should be very, very delicious.
Yeah. Wow. So the biomass of a cauliflower plant is actually 40% cauliflower and 60% leaf?
Something close to that.
You'd think they would have engineered that differently.
So this, in general, gets wasted.
I asked food waste expert Tamara Soma for her reaction to Douglas's story.
When I see Douglas's issue, actually, it's an issue that is repeated in many areas of the Global South. And what I find really frustrating is that in the terminology of food waste literature, there's often this differentiation. So in the case of the Global South, the terminology is food loss. And usually it's attributed to the lack of technology, the lack of modern storage infrastructure, the lack of education of traditional farming method. And what you see from this case is that there's nothing accidental about this, and this has nothing to do with technology. In fact, what we see is that our choices.
So here's your last deal, Miss Presky. Now, which would you rather do? Hit this Jew over the head with a bag of sugar, or beat out that rhythm on a drum? Come on, love.
I'll take the bag.
You mean you're gonna trade this 4-foot cube of 18-carat Swiss bullion and the snake knives, Mrs. Presky, all for that little bag?
Oh, yes, I want the bag.
Well, all right then, open it up.
Oh, why, this is a bag of shit.
But it's really great shit, Mrs. Presky.
Our global regulations, our policy, and even supermarket policies really have a reverberation. It impacts many parts of the world. There's nothing accidental about this case that Douglas is facing. It's actually quite a purposeful act of pushing him to waste.
And do people like Douglas, not just him specifically, but others around the world in the same situation, do they have any understanding, comprehension, apprehension, really, of what is it, what the forces are that are pushing them into the situation of throwing out 60% of a perfectly good crop?
Right, and I think in the case of Douglas, he specifically mentioned that he relies 80% of his market on the global market. And because of that, he is very much vulnerable to global price shock, speculation, and the fluctuation of prices. And this is problematic when you consider that actually if you build the local market and the local infrastructure, especially with the traditional market, there's actually a lot of avenue for these unwanted vegetables to actually be sold. So it's a market system.
Pyongyang carrots, get your Pyongyang carrots right here. More nutritious than Dear Leader speeches. Our own homegrown stones, painted orange to suck on, right here, Pyongyang carrots.
I'll buy a carrot stone from you, little girl.
Thank you, kind sir.
How old are you, little girl?
29.
When the last North Korean comrade turns carrot salesman, when Fidel's beard is but a popular brand of steel wool, Mars will still rivet the vision of the faithful. Workers will reach paradise if we have to build a bridge out of their skulls.
Tim, how does it fit into the bigger picture about the crisis, really, in food supply around the world?
Well, I think it is indicative of the way that our food system is built inefficiently. So if you think about his experience, it's yielding about 6 tons of beans per acre. He loses 60%, so that's 3.6 tons. And then that gets shipped to the north, and we buy it. It sits in the fridge for a week, and then it goes slimy, and we throw it out. And actually, you only end up with 1 to 2 tons equivalent being eaten at the end of the day. And all of that is not just the loss of the food, it's the loss of the water that has gone into producing it. So a total loss of his 600,000 litres of water, 450 tons of water per hectare, is effectively being thrown away in a way that's non-productive. And on top of that, there is also the issue of fertiliser. So an acre of his beans would require something like 200 kilograms of fertiliser. And so that is created It takes carbon to create the fertilizer. We put it on the ground. It volatilizes and it upsets the air quality. It produces the beans. And then we throw the beans away. That makes absolutely no sense in a global basis. And we can talk about that for almost any supply chain, anywhere in the world. They're terribly inefficient. And then, as I said earlier, when you add on the fact that we tend to overeat a whole lot of food as well as a form of food waste.
And he opened the air-conditioned door and he went inside and he sat down at a table.
What did he order?
Thank you, Jesus.
What did he order?
And he ordered some food, Jesus.
Food, we gotta eat.
More food, he ordered himself a hamburger.
A big,
yes, Jesus, he added himself a hamburger.
Hamburger.
With onions. And pickles, thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Rama.
And he ordered some lettuce and a side of tomatoes and some french fries and a big glass of Coca-Cola.
We're hungry, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, we're hungry. Oh, my, yes, sir, we're hungry, my, oh, yeah. Always gluttoning around.
I've never eaten before, and I will eat again because, you know, that's the way to live. We are all eating. That's one thing we're all sharing together. Let's eat together.
Here, can many of your people say you're not on anybody's food chain? To us, this
I
is
don't
good.
Want to be on
we eat. Food. We don't get eaten. This is the. This is truth. Yes.
This is truth. This is death. Also, truth is death.
Do you know anyone who has been eaten?
Are eating something.
Do I know anyone who has been eaten and lived to talk about it?
Eat your vegetables.
Oh, I know no one who kiss and tell.
You cannot name them. I cannot name them.
Who are they?
What am I talking about?
Right. Why are you here?
Let's have something to eat. All talk is fruitless. Let's have some fruit. Thank you.
Oh, look at the ecstasy.
Oh, my, that is good. That is good.
Oh, Easter is a good time to eat too, you know.
Give me an egg.
Here, have an egg. There you are.
Oh, look, that's a little bunny.
Here, why don't you smoke from this Paschal lamb?
Thank you very much.
Very good. Look at that. I've put a mark on your door so they'll pass you over. Don't you worry. They're not going to bother you during dinner.
No, thank you very much. I'm smearing beet juice on my
door. Would you hand me some more of those locusts and groats?
Then you get down to the whole food system being amongst the most inefficient of any human system. And then when you talk to government, they say, oh, well, we are investing in making agriculture more efficient. We're making agriculture more yielding, higher yielding, better. And what happens? That just goes into waste, and that just goes into overconsumption. We've got to do more about making the food system work to deliver health and environmental benefits.
Not far from his restaurant, he's planted squash, beans, and corn, known by many indigenous nations as the Three Sisters.
Are we ultimately talking about land when we're talking about restaurants?
Sure. We need the land to create the food, to bring the food here to feed the people. Who is here first? Who is here the longest? It's not a competition. It's just a fact. You want to know about the land? Go to the most vital source. The most vital source are indigenous people. You know, the land is fragile, and that's where we get our food from. It means actually reclaiming what was here, finding out what it was, what it is, and how to source it. So grow it, source it for the community. So we're about to prep the Three Sisters soup. The Three Sisters is one of the many special stories. In the story, the Three Sisters were people who became plants, corn, beans, squash. The corn grows up very tall, so it creates a pole system for the beans to climb, because beans are climbers and they need to get up high where there's more sunlight. But the corn needs a lot of nitrogen and more nitrogen the soil can provide. The beans create the nitrogen in the soil. The squash has really huge leaves and it cools the soil because it creates shade. And then it also, because it's so prickly, if you've ever tried to go get a squash, you really get injured by the squash leaf. It keeps predators away. They all provide each other with nourishment, so that's how they're able to grow in the dynamic force that they are. But not only that, the three combined items of beans, squash, and corn, grown like the Three Sisters, this combination of food hold nutrients and vitamins that each human being needs. Pepper. The These are our teachers. They were here before us. They teach us how to live and survive and commune together for the betterment of humankind.
Hello, hello, hello there, dear friends and kids. This is your old Uncle David, and it's time for the Whisper and Squash Show.
Yay! Hooray for the squash!
Yes, sirree, the old Whisper and Squash Show, brought to you again by organic food. Remember, if you're gonna eat it raw.
Right on.
Back from the shadows again. Out where an engine's your friend. Where the vegetables are green and you can pee into the stream.
Right on, right
on. Yes, we're back from the shadows again. Howdy, everybody. I'm the Whispering Squash.
And I'm the Lonesome Bee Tick.
And I'm Artie Choke. And we're just a joke.
And don't be afraid, little people, because we're just Holy Graham.
Great.
Yeah, but what about you, partner? What you doing today?
Can't be much, Lonesome. Nobody's working.
Nobody except us, and I'm getting tired of standing here with these geeks a-gawking at me.
Now you keep it sweet, Pete.
Listen here, Leafhead, I'm gonna
pluck your eye. Now, boys, fighting's out of style.
Yeah.
And fun's where the fair's at. In the future, that is.
You can bet your roots, Toots, it's tons of fun.
And technical stimulation.
That's what I mean.
And there's lots more of me where I come from.
In government-inflicted simulation.
The future can't wait. No place to hide.
Yeah, so climb on aboard.
We're going inside.
We're going back to the shadows again. Out where an Indian's your friend.
Going down, going down.
Where the vegetables are green and you can pee right into the stream, and that's important. We're back from the shadow again.
If there's anything that I have learned being in Canada now almost half of my life, being in Turtle Island.
Before the beginning, there was this turtle, and the turtle was alone, and he looked around, and he saw his neighbor, which was his mother, and he lay down on top of his neighbor, and behold, she bore him in tears an oak tree, which grew all day and then fell over like a bridge, and lo, under the bridge there came a catfish, and he was very big, and he was walking, and he was the biggest he had seen.
Is that I have learned so much from Indigenous elders, Indigenous scholars, about the principles called all my relations. And the beauty of this principle is not only does it promote connection between us all as a human race, but it also connects us to the environment, to the food that we eat, because, you know, the chicken that you're eating, the apple that you're eating, they're all part of this broader relations, broader part of your family, basically. And so if you have that sort of paradigm, if you have that mindset, food is no longer a commodity, it's actually part of a broader community. And I think that it's such a beautiful principle that all Canadians should definitely know and understand.
Hey, Wing, reincarnation's bad for digestion. I feel that sweet and sour chicken being reborn in my stomach. Hear it squawking?
I know, Wong, that bug I just stepped on was my grandma. Sorry, Granny.
Sorry, Soybean. You were a good grandpa, but a man's gotta eat.